Okay, what if you heard?
The change in net irradiance at the tropopause after allowing for stratospheric temperatures to readjust to radiative equilibrium.
Are you following? Me neither. But what if he said,
the sun shines down on Earth, warming our oceans, burning our skin, heating the asphalt. The numbers suggest more and more the heat is getting absorbed by the Earth and its inhabitants, and less is being reflected out into space. This makes the Earth hotter.
Well, now you know I'm describing global warming. Scientists face a struggle all the time. How to talk about their work in a way that everyone gets, but remains true to the science. And how not to wince the next day when the headlines miss the nuances in what they tried to say. 29-year-old Christina Love teaches physics at Drexel University. During her years of science education, she got no formal training in how to communicate with non-scientists, and that's not unusual.
So this is kind of the current model of our galaxy. So you see these beautiful pictures of our galaxy. One model shows for dark matter that the galaxy's deep way down in this huge spherical halo of dark matter. We're surrounded by it. And so it's here, but you can't detect it. And that's the idea.
Love is in a room full of scientists at the Chemical Heritage Foundation in Center City, Philadelphia. They're standing around posters explaining their work. Get-togethers like this are something scientists do all the time with other scientists. But this time, this event is open to the public. And scientific jargon, it's discouraged. Love organized this event called Start Talking Science to coax scientists to talk about their work in a more accessible way to non-experts.
When I first learned about dark matter, I was an undergraduate at Westchester, and I really wanted to scream. I thought, how is this possible? How have I not known this up until now? I went through all of, you know, my grade school and high school thinking we know everything, and it turns out what we know is less than 5% of the entire universe. So there's just some really amazing things out there that everyone deserves to know and understand.
In the last 10 years, major scientific societies have begun holding workshops on communications. Some have even established big money prizes to promote the idea. Naomi Oreskes teaches the history of science at Harvard, and she's written extensively about funding for climate change skeptics.
There's definitely been a change from a feeling 10 years ago that it was the job of scientists to do the science as well and as accurately as possible, but that it was really someone else's job to communicate it. And most scientists I knew and I talked to really thought it was your job, that it was the job of science journalists. And scientists used to get mad because they felt that science journalists did a poor job.
Oreskes says controversies around politically charged topics such as climate change have led a lot of scientists to rethink how they talk about their work. If the science is complicated, she says, it's a delicate art to simplify without dumbing it down.
I always like to say it's not dumbing it down, it's cleaning it up, right? But how to make that clean up, how to sort of polish it and make it presentable in a way that's not misleading, it's not trivial.
She says one of the best science communicators to emerge from the lab into the public sphere is this guy.
We have to accept that we don't live in a world where scientists can simply do the science, publish it, and assume that it will translate to good public policy. It doesn't work that way.
That's Penn State climate scientist Michael Mann. If he sounds like he's on the warpath for better science communication, he is.
We have to be out there defending the science, informing the electorate, explaining the science and its implications, because if we don't, it means special interests, front groups, paid attack dogs will simply poison the discussion with misinformation and disinformation.
Mann's views are shaped by personal experience. In 1998, he co-authored a paper that looked at weather patterns from medieval times by analyzing ice cores and tree rings. And in this paper was a simple little graph, one he thought pretty uninteresting. But the graph communicated his findings so well, so easily to a lay audience that it got a lot of press. Then he became a top target for those who claim climate change is a hoax. He was called before Congress. His emails were hacked. At one point, in a national magazine, he was referred to as the, quote, Jerry Sandusky of climate change.
I never envisioned that majoring in physics and applied math and going into the study of the climate system would place me at the center of, you know, what may be the most contentious debate that we have faced as a society. I didn't sign up for that.
But now man has embraced it. That iconic chart is now known as the hockey stick graph. It shows how the average temperature of the Earth has risen dramatically since the start of the Industrial Revolution. Mann wrote a book on his experiences, The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines. Mann says back before the famous graph, he was pretty naive and just wanted to stay in his lab doing nerdy calculations. He's now an advocate for scientists to get out of their bunkers and engage the public.
And part of that is using metaphors and thinking, trying to get outside of your own scientific comprehension of the issue and think about how, you know, how would I think about this if I wasn't a climate scientist, if I wasn't a scientist at all?
Mann says the challenges include widespread misconceptions about the scientific process.
We don't prove things in science. We establish, you know, best explanations for observed phenomena. We apply, you know, weights of evidence. We pose hypotheses, and then we look at the observations and we see if they support the hypotheses. And it's this iterative process. There are huge uncertainties at the base of every area of science. That doesn't mean that we know nothing.
Mann and Oreskes, the Harvard professor, agree that the problem for scientists is not just a lack of skill or comfort with public speaking. Science sits at the center of many major public policy debates. Economic interests on both sides look for science that supports their position and will attack findings that don't. That point is not lost on younger scientists like physicist Christina Love.
It's almost a fear of not explaining it properly and then all of a sudden becoming the next controversy. So you kind of see that with evolution and with climate change, and at the risk of getting cosmologists in trouble, I don't really feel like the Big Bang Theory is attacked all that much. And I don't really understand why it isn't.
Maybe the explanation is that even though some think the Big Bang conflicts with the Bible, the theory doesn't really threaten anyone's livelihood. Yet. For The Pulse, I'm Susan Phillips.